Okay, our concluding speaker for this afternoon is Chris Van Kessel.
Yep.
And the title is Toward an Agronomic Assessment of N2O Emissions.
Thank you all. Thank you all for hanging in a little long to the last talk of the session. I know you're all waiting for the business meeting to start, so I will not go over time. I would like to thank my co-author, Jan Willem van Groeningen, and his brother, Kees Jan van Groeningen, and Une Unema and Geert Veldhoff and, from the University of Wageningen. I was on sabbatical leave last year, and that's actually where we did this little experiment, this little review, actually. Let's see now. The talk over here, I think, is going to be all about N2O emissions in agriculture. I focus on agriculture only. And particular thing, I would like to make a link toward crop productivity. What we mean by that is, for example, if you look at the global estimate of N2O, we estimated from agriculture to be 2.2 teragrams of N2O per year. And about 70% of that is actually derived from unprecedented N2O emissions. So from that whole 2.2 is actually 69% of total of what's being emitted every year. Now, if you look at the U.S., the total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, as estimated by Snyder et al., that just came out in a review article, is from the total, 469 is contributed to N2O. And keep in mind, N2O is a much more potent greenhouse gas than CO2, about 300 times more potent. From that 469, 377 is actually derived from agriculture. So even in the United States, if you scale down from the world to the United States, we are still in the same ballpark. About 70% of all the N2O in the United States has an agriculture origin. Now, IPCC has been using a default factor, which is about, the default factor was used in the models and in estimates is 1% of the N fertilizer applied. So if you don't have any number, you always can use the 1%. Now, of course, that's kind of an, how do you get this number? Actually, this number, I think Arvin Moshe came up with that number many, many years ago in a review article that has been used actually ever since. Now, Paul Crutchen et al. Actually published a paper in 2008, and they actually questioned actually the validity of that number. And actually, their number is actually way higher, and they have 3 to 5% N being emitted as N2O what you apply. Now, the two are different because the first one, the 1% is actually a bottom-up number. A bottom-up number means is you go out, you get a measurement, and then you scale up. Paul did the other way around, top-down. He looked at all N2O, and then he started deducting all the different known sources. He could identify cart or whatever it is. And then he got everything taken care of, and the remaining has to be agriculture. So that's why I think the two are a little bit different. This one over here also includes, for example, biological nitrification. If you have biological nitrification, you add nitrogen. Of course, that N is also susceptible to N2O. That is in the 3.5. That is not actually in the 1% that actually IPCC has been using. So if we go into the agronomic view, what I mean by that is, if you look at all the data being published, they are all N2O being recorded in the literature are all based on area. It can be a square meter, it can be a hectare, it can be a section or whatever you want, but it's all based on area. So we wonder, you know, whether it should link the N2O to the amount emitted per unit of production. Of course, you can say, do you have to go from the area, from the 1 hectare, but you have to link that back, we have to link that also to productivity. Or if you phrase it differently, you go by the hectare versus the yield, as you express the amount of N2O that's being emitted. This means actually is, should you focus or not on, assuming in agronomy, we all have to keep on producing food, I don't think we're going to stop tomorrow producing food. If we have to produce so much food in the world, should we try to produce food in the world with the least amount of N2O per unit product we produce? Of course, that means actually, if you want to say, well, I want to reduce N2O by reducing fertilizer input, yes, I can see that will happen. But also I can see then that the amount of food eventually you're going to produce is going to be less, and actually the amount of N2O produced per unit of food might actually be higher than when you go for the optimum rate. And that was actually the thing where we were going to try it out. Does it work or does it not work at all if you do that? So what we did actually is we did a meta-analysis, kind of things everybody's doing, meta-analysis, so why not another one of those? So how you do that? So we look at all the literature in what we could find, refereed literature. We did not go into the gray. And then of all the crops, except grasslands, we left out grassland, but every crop you can think of, including potatoes and onions or whatever you have. And then we took all the studies where you have N2O emissions on a rate of fertilizer input, or one rate or whatever it is were, and then linked that to a unifying factor. In this case, happens to be nitrogen. The only way you can actually compare different crops if you actually use as a unifying factor, in this case it had to be nitrogen. Nitrogen was the only one we could measure in all those crops. And then we were also looking for studies actually where they actually had a zero N input. Because if you have a zero N input and you have a fertilizer rate study, you can actually calculate the N balance. You can calculate nitrogen use efficiency by the N difference method, and you also can calculate actually excess or non-excess of nitrogen. So the only thing, the total N in the crop, whether it was below ground or above ground, actually below ground or above ground depending on the crop you have, the total N can be unifying factor so we could compare all the crops. For example, there was no other way we could compare the crops. So there are all studies, N2O, total N, crops, no grassland, zero N we tried, manure, yes, we also included the manure applications. And actually, believe it or not, we only can find 22 studies published as so far. And some of the things, those were actually partially published. We had to go back to the author and ask him for additional information on total N, because the total N was not reported with the N2O. But we could actually, there were three of those, we could get back to the authors asking for the total N. And in total, there were 188 measurements, which is a bit on the low side, guys. If you do meta-analysis, 188 points, I mean, I would like to have 1,000, but I mean, there was no way we could ever get it. So 188 is a bit on the low side if you do a big meta-analysis. All right, here it is. When you plot out all those studies and applied all the way from the zero, our control in those studies, all the way down to about 330 kilograms, you plot out all the different crops. So I mean, there's kind of an unusual figure over here, because this includes potatoes, includes corn, includes barley, includes rice, onions, everything. You put everything on a line, there's kind of a straight line you have. So the bottom line is, every crop you have, you add nitrogen, it's responsive to nitrogen. Now we know that. But it also shows that the nitrogen we were using as a unifying concept, actually with this one, it does work. I mean, if you add the nitrogen, you can actually combine all those crops in one figure. Now look at N2O. If you apply N2O, if you apply nitrogen from 0 to 350, and here we have N2O emitted, kilograms of N2O per hectare. Because all the way from 1, when you have no nitrogen applied, we have about a little higher than 1 kilogram coming off per year, per hectare, per growing season, all the way up to 8. And you see there's a very flat line, all the way up to about 200 kilos, and then it shoots way up, it shoots all the way up to 6 kilos. So actually, just plotting it out on a hectare basis, we see, yes, there's very flat, with a low amount, a little more than 1 kilogram, and then we have this sharp increase once we hit about 225 kilograms. Now, if you plot out per yield now, then we have this kind of graph. That's the one I was referring to, link it to yield. Here we have again the same axis, 0 to 350. And here now we have the yield scaled N2O emission, what means actually the gram of N2O emitted per N, well, 1 kilogram of N uptake. So for every kilogram of uptake in the crop, that is the amount of N that N2O is being emitted. And we start on a zero N. We start with zero N around 12 or 13. And then it dips a little bit all the way down to around 10. And then again, it shoots up. Now, those numbers are not significant. There's a trend, you might say. There might be a trend that you actually do have a little bit higher emission at the low end application. Then it goes down to around the 10 over here at the 200 again, and then it shoots up. But again, I mean, I want to point out again, those are not significant difference. And I didn't know whether if we did have a large data set, let's say 1,000 points, maybe that curve would have become significant. But at the moment, I think we cannot say that it's just a trend. But it gives you a little bit of shape how the N2O is emitted per kilogram of N uptake. And then, of course, we could calculate N surplus now from all the study, because some of the study did not report a zero N. So this is like a subset of that data set where we could calculate the N surplus. And the surplus is being calculated as follows. We know how much was put in, because it was reported in the literature, in the papers. We also could calculate, or they have provided a number, how much was being removed. So you have the input minus the removed, and that gives you a deficit, or gives you a surplus. So if you have more, if you took off more than they added, we had a negative value. And if you had, actually, at the end of the day, there was more N left in the system than they removed through the above ground biomass and the grain or whatever was potatoes, then we have the surplus. And you see, there's a very flat line. If you have an N surplus situation, you have a very low, you have, okay, I lost my, yeah, see? And then here you have, again, the numbers over here, the yield scale N2O, again, gram of N2O per kilo of N accumulated. If you go in the N deficit area all the way up to about 10, 15 kilos above the surplus, you see we have again around an 8 grams of N2O being emitted per kilogram N uptake. And as soon as you hit the surplus, you go a little bit higher, 50, it really shuts up again. So as soon as you actually pass that surplus, you got this big spike in N2O. And, if that is the case, and if that is going to have a universal response to N2O, of course, the IPCC factor is a straight line. IPCC factor says more N input, more N2O. Well, it's not a straight line anymore, depending on if you look at on the N surplus. And look at the nitrogen efficiency. Again, we can calculate nitrogen efficiency again by the same way. If you have a zero N plot and you have a different rate of N being applied, you have a total N, you can actually calculate the very classical way of N use efficiency. And if you do that, you see if you increase efficiency of fertilizer from 20 all the way up to 80% fertilizer use efficiency, you reduce your yield scale N2O is almost a straight line. You have very, very high emission, like 14 grams of N2O per kilogram N uptake. If you have a low efficiency, it goes all the way down to half, almost half, 7 over here, 6-7 over here, and you have efficiency of 80%. So efficiency, I think, is indirectly a very good indicator of your N2O. Of course, because if you have high use efficiency, that N cannot be actually used for N2O emission. So what are our conclusions? There's a trend, but it's not significantly, that if you actually have the lowest amount of N2O per kilogram of N accumulated, and the rate of about, in those particular 22 studies, in the range of 180 to 200 kilos, you actually do get the lowest amount of N2O per yield unit, in this case, total N. There's a sharp increase as soon as you hit the N in the surplus range. As soon as you go by that line, you have a significant increase in the N2O. So I think on the fertilizer use efficiency, I think that if you could figure out, I could all talk about it. If you indeed increase nitrogen use efficiency, automatically, I think you have a sharp decrease in the N2O emission. Yes, what I just said, it is kind of, those two actually had to fit a little bit. So overall, I think on the strategy, I think just reducing fertilizer input, I would not argue. If people say, well, Chris, why don't you just cut your fertilizer by 10%? Then you're going to then you actually will also cut your N2O by 10%. Well, it's not true if you actually link it to yield. If you link it to yield, it doesn't make any difference. As long as your fertilizer input is not going to surpass your surplus line, then I think cutting fertilizer down with respect to, and then link it then to productivity, I think not going to help. And I think another thing, what we should try to do is we have to optimize, I think, fertilizer use efficiency very, very much around the input, what is equal to zero plus any, the zero surplus input. If you know what that number is, the zero, that number, and if you can try to figure out what is your fertilizer use efficiency, I think that's probably one of the more effective way to reduce N2O. And I think that's all I have. Yes, is there any questions that I'm more than try willing to answer those? Yes. Harold. No, because I think most of the studies we did,
Answering the mic.
No, I think when we put the data set together, we we try to stay within a growing season. So if there was no crop and we still have N2O emissions, that's kind of difficult to link it to nitrogen. So we have to be somewhat careful what the data said you can use if you link it to the productivity. But still, your point is well taken, because you can say, well, Chris, I can only grow one crop a year, and I have 6 months a year there's no N2O. How do you account for that N2O? So if you do a total budget, I agree, then you have to link that back again to the yield. But here we try to stay within, as much as possible, within the growing season. Yeah. Yes?
Emissions at zero rate of application were not any lower than the emissions up to 100 or 150 kilograms per hectare. Wouldn't that mean that the emission factor is about zero?
No, because it didn't go through zero. It went to 1.5.
But at the what? Zero rate, I mean, the emission factor per added N.
Yes, you mean in the other, when we did it on a hectare basis. On a hectare basis, I think, yeah, there was another question we had to address. If you... In agriculture, what would be actually your control? When we put the data set together, should we actually subtract N2O emissions from the background emissions from, let's say you go to a natural ecosystem, and that is the number you're going to subtract from this number, which we did not. We kept the background in as it was in agriculture. And that's true. If you do that,
emission factors are done that way.
Yes. No.
It's the amount of nitrogen, it's per amount of nitrogen you apply above the zero control.
Yeah, but what is the control? And we were debating that issue. What is the control? If someone says, Chris, I mean, if you have an agriculture system over here and your control is going to be some land over there that has never been cultivated, I said, no, that's not the control, because if I go into a system that has received 50, 60 years of fertilizer nitrogen and I do not apply any nitrogen in year 61, that system probably is going to get you more N2O emitted than the one over there that has never received any nitrogen fertilizer for the last 100 years. And I said, well, I feel somewhat uncomfortable to say, well, no, we're just going to take that after 61 years number and subtract that from the number of that particular year. But it was a discussion, and you can go both ways. You should have subtracted that number, and then if you did that, everything would come down a little bit, yes.
We've run out of time, so let's give our speaker another hand.